Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Right Down the Street. My name is Brian Barnett. I'm the mayor of the city of Rochester Hills, and of course, your host for this podcast called Right Down the Street. And this podcast, as you know, if you've tuned in before, is designed to celebrate the ideas, the perspectives, and the passions of the people that live in our community. We've had some great guests, and today is no exception. Got another really, really exceptional individual to introduce you to, who is doing some wonderful things in our community. And as you know, we feel really blessed to have a community of vibrant regional and national leaders, and we'll be bringing another one of those to you today. This idea of bringing folks to you is really designed to celebrate the collective awareness of those folks around us who are making a difference, people that literally live right down the street. And so today, I'm really pleased to welcome a good friend of mine and Rochester Hills resident, Ali Leila. Let me tell you a little bit about him if you don't know him already. Ali is a member of my mayor's advisory committee on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and he's a leader in our local Islamic community. And the timing of our conversation today is really critical because it's occurring just as Ramadan begins, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in our program here today. And really kind of unpack that and understand a little bit more about what that means for the Muslim community and what it means for those that aren't in the Muslim community. So let me tell you a little bit about why you should listen to Ali. He knows his stuff. He's a PhD candidate in Islamic studies at the Oriental Institute of Oxford University. His master's degree is in Near Eastern Civilizations and Languages from Wayne State University, and he received his bachelor's degree from Cairo University. And I don't know what the Cairo nickname is. If someone's out there screaming, go Bearcats or Cougars or Gators. But if there's anybody out there from Cairo, you've got a friend and a fellow graduate here in Ali. He's been active in our Islamic community for a number of years. He's also, this one's close to my heart, a faculty member at Oakland University. I know the call out there, go Grizzlies, where he teaches Islamic studies. Super impressive. You've got a really deep background in this. And so with all of that easy stuff out of the way, let me welcome you to the program today. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So tell us, Ali, a little bit. I mean, I've read a little bit of your bio, and obviously you've got a deep understanding and an innate knowledge of all those things that you've studied through your various educational pursuits. But tell us something that might surprise people a little bit about you. What do you like to do when you're not studying those intense topics?
Well, when I came here to America in 1999, came from Cairo, I was invited by the Muslim community in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. For the first time in 1999, I came to lead the Muslim community during the month of Ramadan. That was the intention, because the month of Ramadan is the month of fasting and extra prayers. And this requires someone who memorized the Quran by heart to lead the extra voluntary prayers in the evening. So when I came to Pittsburgh, the Muslim community liked me, and they decided, actually, or they asked me to stay with them. So this is how I became an imam in America for 20 years now. I really like to talk to people. I really like to start projects. I understand that knowledge, there's no end for knowledge journey. So we have to keep, you know, improving ourselves and seek knowledge to the last day.
Sure. And obviously you could have chosen to live anywhere in the region. You and your family live here. I believe you have kids in the school district with my boys. What made you decide on Rochester Hills in particular?
Well, as a father, I have four children, three teenagers, so getting me very busy. So one of the main, interest was safety and school system. So I could have lived in Troy, but I bought my house here in Rochester Hills because of these two main reasons, that I want to feel safe as a family and want my children to go to good school system. In addition of nature, I like the nature and the parks and the mountain bike in Bloomer Park. And I still cannot believe I'm so close to home and have such a great park with everything you can think of.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Bloomer Park. I went over there in the past week, and I found, having been mayor of this community for such a long time, there were some trails and some views and some places I had never seen before. And it was really, I came back and was telling my team here about it. It's such an exceptional park, and you're right to mention the nature here. But funny you mentioned Bloomer Park. I basically got lost there this week, and I've been there many times.
You know, what's another thing about Bloomer Park, that last summer we had the Friday ceremony outdoor because of the pandemic. So we used to go there every Friday. People come and we, you know, do this Friday ceremony, and people can see each other in a safe way. So it's very dear to me.
Sure. Well, we share that. Now, listen, let me ask you a question, because this is really, I think, a key to our discussion today. Obviously, you know, religion is a foundational part of your life. And, you know, despite all the things that you've studied, it's still probably pretty common to run into people that have a lot of misconceptions about the Muslim faith and about the practices. And they read snippets, or they hear from a friend of a friend. They have a lot of things that they don't understand. You know, what is the most important thing that you would like our audience to understand about the faith? And then unpack it a little bit. I mean, I'm sure you know the misconceptions that are out there, and the maybe some of the fears that people have, you know, whether they realize it or not. Talk to us a little bit about that. You've studied it. Share with an audience that might not be as familiar as you are. What's the important, you know, what are some of the important tenets?
Well, Islam is one of the three monotheistic faiths. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they all believe in one God, the creator, the God of Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad, peace be upon all of them. So and there are plenty of commonality between these three religions, including believing in one God, believing in a revelation, believing in all prophets that God has chosen to guide people. You can see a lot of similarities, but people tend to focus on the differences. Whereas they really look at the similarities, all ethical structure, ethical systems in three religions are the same. Inviting people to live in peace and coexist with each other, and equality, justice. These all are well-established ethical values, universal values established in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. There are, of course, some theological differences about the nature of God, about you know, do's and don'ts. That's normal, that's expected, but the essence of these three religions are the same.
Many in our community have probably, if they don't practice the Muslim faith, have never been into a mosque. And inside a mosque is very mysterious. What happens there, what doesn't happen there. Walk an individual into a typical mosque in any community. What are some of the events that happen over a week? And let folks know what goes on there, and how folks actually practice their faith in a mosque.
One of the five pillars of Islam, one is declaring shahada, or testify the faith. Other is to pray five times a day. So praying five times a day, it's preferable to do this in congregation in the mosque. So if you walk in a mosque at 6 a.m. this morning, you will find people praying there together. Around 2 o'clock, people come and pray. Then late afternoon, around 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. these days, people also gather to pray. Sunset is another, the fourth prayer time. And then the night prayer these days around 10 o'clock. So these are the five daily prayers. It's preferable to be done in congregation in the mosque, so that people can see each other and meet one another. Friday is a very special day. It's like Sunday for Christians and Saturday for the Jews. Friday is the holy day for Muslims. In the afternoon prayer, the imam would give a sermon, and the mosque would be full of people. And because the place cannot accommodate everyone, we have to do two sets of prayers. So people would come and do the service, and then they go. Another congregation would come because the community is growing. So Friday is a very special day in the week, and Ramadan is a very special month in the year. And I'm talking about the lunar calendar. So Ramadan is going to start tonight, actually after sunset. For a month, Muslim will practice one of the pillars of Islam, which is fasting. And you can find, of course, the elements of fasting in all religious traditions. So what's unique about Ramadan is fasting in the daytime, abstaining from eating or drinking anything or any sexual activities from dawn to dusk. And then after sunset, Muslims would come together, families come together and eat. Of course, because of the pandemic, every family is breaking fast by themselves. But usually the mosque is open, people bring food, a potluck dinners, and people eat together. And then after that, they do the long night prayers, which is very special to Ramadan. It's called Taraweeh. So this is one of the main activities in Ramadan.
Now the prayers that you mentioned, either the five daily prayers and the prayers specific to Ramadan, are they personal prayers of each individual practicing the faith? Are they recessional in that you know what the prayer is you're supposed to pray at a specific time? Talk to us a little bit about the purpose of those prayers. Are they each very focused, or is it just finding time to connect with your faith at a certain time during the day?
Yeah, the timing is set up. Every Muslim is supposed to know the timing, and there is a schedule actually for the timing. The best case scenario is that people would come together and pray together. If you cannot do that, you pray at home with your family. If you cannot do that, you pray in your workplace. If you are traveling, you stop by anywhere, you're in a hotel, you just face the Mecca and pray. So there is a spiritual, ethical, and social aspects of these prayers. The spiritual is to connect you with God all the time. Social is to be connected with the Muslim community. Even if you are not in congregation, you know that other Muslim brothers and sisters are praying at the same time, facing the same direction.
Yeah. So what does Ramadan look like in your household? You said you have teenage kids. Right. You know, they haven't studied it as much as you have, although I'm sure they've watched your leadership. How do you explain it to them? Obviously it must be a little different when the other students break for lunch at the high school and they choose to do something different. Talk to me a little bit about what it looks like in your household.
Right. It is ironic that month of Ramadan is the month when Muslims deprive themselves from physical pleasures, enjoyments, but at the same time, it's a month of joy and happiness. You cannot imagine how Muslims actually long for the month of Ramadan to come, and when it ends, they wish it stays longer. Because we focus in the month of Ramadan on our spirituality. We focus on our connection with God and sharing the blessings God has bestowed upon us with others. So the routine actually changed so much in Ramadan and focuses on the fasting practice. So we would wake up before dawn to eat the early morning meal before dawn. Because from that moment, we cannot eat or drink, all right? So waking everybody up and then eat together, and then we pray the morning prayers, and sometimes we sleep again after that, and or sometimes we go to work. And then the family would come together before the sunset to do some prayers, and then when the sun sets, this is the time to eat something light, and then we pray, and then we eat our dinner. We call it breakfast because we fast the whole day. So it's a time of enjoyment, it's a family time when the family comes together, we eat together, and then we pray together after that.
Mm. And the kids have grown up with it. And so for them, it's they also share that experience. They look forward to it as kind of a family time. And
right. It looks like very, very challenging from outside. But really, when you do it, when you live this rich spiritual experience, it's not as difficult as it might seem. I personally, my personal experience, I started fasting when I was 5 years old. Although my parents told me they are too young, don't do that, but I insisted, and because everybody around me is fasting and we celebrate, you know, breakfasting together at the sunset. So it is a beautiful experience that you feel that you want to be part of, that we deprive our body for a while, but we focus more in our spirit and focus more on feeling the pain and the suffering of those who are less fortunate, and we share our food and we share our money with others.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That was a really exceptional explanation, and you hit on the purpose of the practice and recognizing Ramadan, but also kind of how it lays out in today's day and age with a family that looks, you know, just like mine, living in the same community. Very, yeah. Very interesting.
Yes. And I ask my kids actually when they come back from school, a little tired, on what happened today. On lunchtime, everybody knows we are fasting, and the people are surprised. Why don't you eat with lunch? And they explain to them that we are Muslims and we fast. This is Ramadan. So people get to know Ramadan more than before. And I think the main purpose of fasting, which exists in all religions in different forms, is to be able to practice self-discipline, to be able to say no to yourself. That's a key. Now in the White House, actually every year, all presidents, they have one dinner, one night, they invite Muslim leaders, ambassadors at the White House to celebrate iftar in Ramadan. So presidents of the United States always issue Ramadan greeting to the Muslim community in America.
Sure. Let me switch topics for just a minute. I'm gonna pick and pry on your experience and a little of your opinions on some of the things happening in the Middle East now. Mm-hmm. I have been blessed to have traveled to the Middle East. I've been to four or five countries there, and a very unique relationship with the United States over the last 25 or 50 years. And one of the things that we've seen change, and I'm really curious to your perspective here, is obviously there's traditionally been conflict in the region. And some of that centers around the relationship with Israel. But lately we've seen a lot of Muslim countries sort of craft new relationships that are positive with Israel. We've seen the UAE, we've seen Morocco, we've seen others, and you start to hear more about working together and opening up commerce and trade and travel and the opportunity for familial relationships to be more normalized. What do you see happening in the Middle East, and how is that changing over the years? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think things are changing in both ways. When it comes to the relationship with Israel, people are tired of wars and conflicts and bombs and killing innocent civilians. People are sick and tired of this, and younger generation now are looking forward to have more peaceful relationship with everybody and stop the war, stop the fighting. And that's something positive. I mean, many young people in the Middle East actually are looking at the United States as a model for democracy and freedom of speech, freedom of religion. They may disagree with the American foreign policy for different reasons, but they admire the lifestyle that Americans enjoy, the basic human rights, which unfortunately they're still deprived from in most of these countries. Young, talented, smart, intelligent young people, they don't have the democracy and the freedom we have. They are deprived from highly prestigious universities and educational institutions. But so people want peace. Governments, they look at things from different perspective, but I'm 100% sure people want to have peace, want to have democracy, economical prosperity. So I see things getting better in this sense, and people are longing for peace and less conflicts in the region.
Have you been to the Middle East?
I used to go almost every year because I have my parents before they passed away. I used to go and visit them and see them. I have brothers and sisters in Egypt. Yeah,
sure. Yeah. And I know you studied there, but have you seen similar changes? Is there a new feeling? Some have called this some of the most important changes in relationships in the Middle East since the 90s. And I'm curious if you, as you travel there and having, kind of grown up there and experienced college there, at least, do you feel it? Is it a different sort of feeling there now?
Right. I grew up in the time, actually, when the war between Egypt and Israel took place in 1973. And we grew up in this environment of fear of others, fear of war to erupt anytime. Now, after signing the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel in 1979 in Camp David here, the time of Jimmy Carter, since then Egypt is a more stable country. And now, as you said, more countries are trying to have peace in the region. Others are putting some conditions to have full a relationship with Israel, which is to enhance the life and the quality of the life of the Palestinians, because so many Palestinians are still suffering, especially in Gaza. They are not part of any political organization, but they're just regular people who want to live normal life. So I'm hopeful in the near future we'll see some improvement in relationships.
Yeah. Well, anytime you want to change a system and millennia of of history, it takes leaders, mm-hmm. right? And I'm a student of leadership, and I'm always interested to ask folks who it is that they look up to, who have been leaders that have been influential in your life, Ali, and maybe share, you know, some of the ways that you lead in the various aspects in which you are called to lead.
Actually, I would say my father was the first one who influenced me when it comes to leadership, because he was a businessman, very busy taking care of his family. But at the same time, because of the religious education he had, he would volunteer sometimes to give a Friday sermon. And he was very active in the community. And I learned from him that volunteerism is important. We have to share. We have to care about others. One of the pillars of Islam is charity, giving charity. So the government is not doing this anymore. So people would actually come to my father, those who are suffering financial crisis, and they would come. And I remember when I was a young boy, he's giving me some money and asked me to go to this family, knock their door and give them this envelope as a gift. So I would go to 1, 2, 3 families, giving them something. So although he was very busy with his business, but he was also caring. And I learned from him that we should not just live for ourselves. We should care about others. Never judge people for who they are. Just try to not judge people, but just try to help as much as you can.
A great answer, really relevant no matter your field. We're talking with my guest today, Ali Leila, one of the foremost Islamic experts in our community here. Thank you for your time today. You know, you teach at Oakland University, and let me flip the script a little bit on leadership from those that influenced you to how you influence others. What are some of the messages that you hope your students take away from spending time in a class with you?
Well, I always tell my students that you are so fortunate that you are living in the United States of America. Traveling around the world, seeing how the educational institutions work, I tell them you have the opportunity to know about others. You have great libraries. You have wonderful universities. You have the right to ask any question. No question is a bad question. So you need to always learn about others. If you want to know about something, you need to spend some time studying it. Because so many agents there are trying to brainwash you. So, but if you are in academia, then you are well equipped with knowledge. You have accessibility to libraries, to professors, intelligent people. Go and do some research if you want really to know about something. If you don't want to know about anything, including Islam, you need to study. And I ask my student to write a term paper, and they pick some subject about Islam, woman in Islam, or peace and war in Islam. What does Islam teach about others? And many of them actually who are not Muslims, they come to me and say, well, I've learned so much in this semester because I've dig deeper and did some research, and I found out that there's plenty of misconceptions and we really need to do our homework.
Out of curiosity, the students that that take Islamic studies with you at Oakland University, what are they? Are they mostly Muslim students? Do you have students that come just because they want to understand it? And then, what do you do with the degree or a focus in Islamic studies? What do most people transition to with that kind of experience? Right.
I always ask my students at the beginning of the semester, why did you decide to take this class? And half of them would be Muslims and the other half of would be non-Muslim, almost 50%. Mm. And the answers actually reflect what you just mentioned in the beginning. People really are curious. People want to know what this Islam, what about it? What do Muslims do? Or what makes a person a Muslim? So many of them, they tell me that, you know, we hear so much about Islam, but we didn't know anything about Islam. So we decided to take this class. Some Muslims actually tell me that we did not go to any Islamic school. So we really want to know more about our own tradition, about our religion. And importantly, how to live as a Muslim in the United States of America. Some actually are trying to promote the idea that you can not be American and Muslim at the same time because these two identities cannot coexist, which is wrong. Islam actually lives in all countries around the world. You'll find Muslims living as a majority, and in some places they live as minority, like here in the United States. Muslims here in America are around between 6 to 8 million Muslims, very diverse religious community. So people actually need to know more by studying and doing some homework. So I ask my students and they give me various answers. Those who are Muslim, they want to know more about Islam, because honestly, the internet is it's a double-edged sword. You know, internet can help provide you with plenty of good information and accurate information. At the same time, it promotes or you can find many misconceptions also. So people are kind of confused. But for those who chose to go to a university and take a class, they are very fortunate because they get the chance to study and to engage in a fruitful discussion.
True. Ali, we're getting near the end of our time together, but I'm curious. You've experienced sort of generationally where Islam has gone in the world, maybe from the 80s to now. You're working with students who will experience in the next 25 years. If you could, you know, if you had your wish, what would you like to see the next 25 years look like of a relationship between Islam and the outside world? What would be your dream scenario?
My dream scenario of people to seek knowledge, because ignorance is our enemy. We are afraid of the things that we ignore. And there, it is unfortunate we're living in a time of we can see that hatred level is going up. And statistics, according to Gallup study, that those who have unfavorable ideas about Islam and Muslims, I've never met Muslims before. I've never been in any mosque. I've never got the chance to read or to hear from Muslim what Islam is. There are some extreme terrorists. They use Islam as to justify their political agenda. But these people are hated and fought against by Muslims than anybody else. So Muslims are the victims of these people. And very tiny, small minority who are causing troubles in the name of Islam. And unfortunately, because they have loud voice, because the media is very much interested in covering these kind of people, those who see the news every day, they think all Muslims are like this. We are in the front line in fighting terrorism and extremism. And I say that because police has a role to play, politicians have a role to play, and intellectuals also have a role to play, because these extreme people are using now social media to recruit new people and to spread their extreme ideas. But we are immuning our community from these ideas and exposing these people and explaining to them why they are wrong. So this is our contribution actually in this war on extremism.
Yeah. Well, you're exactly right. And you wish that those feelings didn't exist, but they do in every community. And I think you said it really well, you know, that ignorance is our enemy. And I've realized that. I mean, even sometimes when I tell people that I'm traveling to, as I've been to Saudi Arabia or Qatar or the UAE, some people question why you'd even want to go. And, you know, you say, man, I wish you could come with me, because there are some passionate people, some beautiful cities, some wonderful things happening, some innovation that is changing lives around the world. And but for ignorance, there would probably be much, you know, much more of that happening. So I think really, really spot on comments. I appreciate those. Let me end with one question that we ask all of our guests, and I'll set it up slowly because it's an interesting one to think about, and I'm sure you'll probably have a different answer later today. But if you could have lunch with one person, dead or alive, deceased or still with us here throughout all of history, who would that person be, and where would you have lunch?
It would be Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. This man changed the course of human history, who came 600 years after Jesus, when humanity was wandering darkness, and he was able to dedicate his life to give life to these people and build a huge civilization that lasted for 10 centuries. So I would love to see him and talk to him and see how did he brought about this profound change to humanity. So I wish I can contribute something to humanity, to my community, to my family. He was a very good example of how to be a leader, and how to use your talent to enhance and improve the life of people. And I would love to meet him anywhere.
Sure. And the second part of that question, which is tough given the way you just framed how incredible that experience would be, but where are you going to take a guest like that? Where are you eating?
I would show him how his message came all the way here to America, to Rochester Hills, to Michigan. I would introduce him to the new world.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a fantastic answer. That would be a lunch to dream of. And certainly you can tell just by the passion which he answered that, the impact that his work has had on your life and so many others in our community. Listen, Ali Leila, I appreciate you. You've been a friend. You've stepped up to help our community understand some of the challenges of a unique population that is incredibly important in Rochester Hills. You're a strong leader and a good man, and I appreciate you making time for us here today on our podcast Right Down the Street. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. We will be back with more guests in the future, but thank you again to our guest, Ali Leila, for unpacking some of the interesting components of the Muslim faith as well as Ramadan. We think of all of our friends as they enter into this this season and wish them well as they experience this time of family and faith. And we will be back, as I said, with more episodes and more guests in the very new future, celebrating those that live and work with you and me right down the street. Until next time, so long and God bless.